Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is FCB Radio, where real talk lives. Visit us online at fcbradio.com. This is Views from the 216 on the FCB Radio Network.
All right, y'all, welcome. This is Ashley, and you are listening to Views from the 216. One of the biggest things that happened is that my daughter was married. So my 22-year-old daughter, if you guys are listening often to Views, you know that I have a 22-year-old and another daughter, a 7-year-old, that I have been mothering as well. So my baby, my 22-year-old, was married this weekend, and I just want to start this show off by saying that I wish her the best, her and her husband. I love them very much, that they are entering into a ministry, and it is one of the most rewarding yet difficult ministries that you can have. And so I certainly pray the Lord and his strength for them and their marriage. It has started off just a little bit, I don't want to say rocky, but just they faced their first challenge as a married couple, where the day after his car was rear-ended here in as they were running errands, before they were supposed to leave on Monday. So right now, they are also moving to Dallas. So not only did she get married, my baby is leaving. And so their travel has been delayed for quite some time, at least a week, if not more. So this is their first little challenge, a little bump in the road, however you want to say it, but they seem to be handling it pretty well. So just continue to pray for them and, again, all of God's strength as they continue on this voyage. As many of you know, we are recording, most things are being recorded from homes, and most people are doing their best to navigate all the things that come with it. Now, Views from the 216, we've been home for longer than just the time of the quarantine, and I have pretty much been able to manage sounds and excess backgrounds for the most part. But I am going to say right now that in the middle of this Cleveland summer, and with the air circulating that I need and etc., it is going to be a little bit difficult. It is also almost a 8:45 in the evening here. So one of the things that we are planning to talk about today, or briefly at least mention in the way of culture, behind us are the fireworks that we seem to be experiencing nationally. So you probably have heard that already. I know there's been some music coming from the apartments next door to me. So you guys, we're doing our best, and just enjoy the ride while you're here. So yeah, so just to go ahead and just kick off the show by mentioning this phenomenon of the fireworks. So it is absolutely crazy to me. And the New York Times had an article that had the conversation about, that talked about the conversation about the conspiracy theories around the fireworks. I'm going to tell you that for the most part, and I think that as you all have listened, I hope that you all can trust that the information that I'm providing is pretty sound. I try to give information that has been thought out a little bit, that has some evidence behind it, etc. But I'm a little shook. I think about these fireworks. Like, I don't know what to think at all. And to be honest, I'm in this place where I'm a little bit like on this wave with the conspiracy theorists. I am not sure that I've ever experienced a summer season with the consistency of fireworks that have been going on for at least the last 3 weeks. And it's totally just kind of amazing that it's happening. And it's also amazing that not just happening in like pocketed areas, but it seems to be having this national conversation now. Even the New York Times have posted an article discussing the conspiracy behind the fireworks. So it's a national thing that's happening that in, at minimum, from, I guess, my circle, inner cities, or your larger major cities, you have these consistent fireworks going. So now, when it started a few weeks back, we all know that this year, some of us have been newly introduced to Juneteenth. So some people, not necessarily me, but some people have been newly introduced to Juneteenth. And for those of us that have had awareness of Juneteenth, at least, or have been to maybe a few celebrations here, small celebrations of Juneteenth here and there, 2020 has brought out a massive, massive push and a lot of conversation about Juneteenth, some bigger celebrations around Juneteenth, etc. So I'll put a pin in that in a minute and talk. We will talk about Juneteenth just a little bit in a second. But the point of what I'm saying in reference to the fireworks is, you know, I'm like, okay, so we've canceled 4th of July this year and it's all about Juneteenth. So cool. I'm good with that. So people are making their, you know, rounding up and we're getting ready for Juneteenth. And so this is where we're going to display the fireworks that have traditionally represented independence. And so this year our fireworks are going to be about the independence of Black folks, and this is what we're going to do. So I'm like, okay, cool, no problem. Well, we are now 10 days past Juneteenth. So definitely a full work week, etc. And they don't seem to be slowing down. And now we have on the internet conspiracy theories that are pretty much circulating saying that the fireworks have been planted or are being handed out to inner city youth specifically, or I guess imaginably, inner city people and families to set off to desensitize us to potential violence. I have seen it stated that it would be internal violence, meaning that that somehow at some point we will turn guns on ourselves and on each other and within the community, and people won't be aware of what's going on. And then I've seen it where there would be desensitized to just potential violence from outside places. I guess specifically reference to either government entities or anti-black organizations and et cetera, that we would have become so accustomed to these fireworks that we would no longer be sensitive to the sound of bullets because they're similar. Now, the New York Times in its conversation and the article that it sent out this weekend actually talked about some people, and it was, well, one woman specifically who decided to go and kind of do her investigation as to where these fireworks were really coming from. And she didn't find much in her journey to find out where she was coming from, and definitely didn't see any evidence to the point that they were given by any government entity. That also led them to talk to the New York City Police Department and other kind of officials within the city who said, you know, definitely, first of all, in New York, just like here in Ohio, you know, setting off fireworks is still illegal. There was nobody handing them out. And they just pretty much lend the activity to people being quarantined and bored and fireworks being available and cheap. So they also talked about promotion. Like, people are traveling to, and this is probably similar as well in Ohio. And so New York and Ohio are both adjacent to Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania, it is legal to sell fireworks. And so they have looser restrictions on fireworks. And there's a company called Phantom in Pennsylvania. I don't know in Ohio. Like, I have seen what we call hood firework displays. But I guess I never inquired as to where people went and got and bought these things. They were just like, I don't know, friends who are firebugs, and they just wanted to do something and blow off these relatively, like, large for me, large for a person who kind of flinches at a bang, fireworks before, and it was cool to kind of have as many as possible and see how long you could set them off on 4th of July. So, this company, Phantom, was doing like a buy one, get one promotion. A lot of them had just opened because of quarantine. So therefore, they were trying to gain back a lot of their revenue. So right now, there's cheap fireworks and people are bored. And hey, they've also been akin, they quoted a Syracuse University student by saying, who said it's like an addiction. Like, you get one, you set it off, and you just want to keep setting them off. So it's just he likened it to an addiction. And so now people are just out and having fun. In this article, they showed the New York City Police Department chief, his Instagram, who had this whole load of fireworks that he had seized from two people who he came across, but somebody in the department who came across, and they confiscated it from two people. So authorities are saying that it is just because we're bored and we don't have anything else to do. I, however, am just saying, I don't know how people have, even at buy one, get one half off, how we have the funds. Now, there are people out here, like, I got my hair done for the wedding, and my stylist blamed it on the extra $600 that people have. So they have the funds. I don't know how people have the access in terms of transportation access to get to them. You know, I know that probably not much besides sparklers do I know where to buy. So even, I do believe there's some places where in Ohio where you can buy fireworks, even though it's illegal to set them off, you can still buy them in Ohio. But most of those places are like in far off rural areas. So it does take some transportation and some effort to get there. Again, mind you, I do know that, you know, sometimes when people, quote unquote, in the hood want to do things, they'll figure it out. So I'm not saying that nobody can go get them, but I am saying that there are some issues with that. And otherwise, you know, I am also still concerned with a few noted drive-bys that I'm aware of. So there have at least been a couple in the last couple weeks that I've been aware of. Two within the city of Cleveland, and then one in Detroit area that were surrounding, two out of the three for sure, surrounded some of these fireworks. And so I'm just not fully convinced that there's nothing behind it. And it's just this weird eeriness that I still get as I sit here and listen to the consistency of the fireworks that have happened night after night after night, and they're not letting up. Most times I'm not one that's bothered by the noise. Like, some people have just been like, oh, it scares me, it scares my dog, just like, oh. My dog at this point is old enough that he doesn't seem like he cared. They used to be kind of scared of him when they were little, but right now he's not bothered. The noise in itself doesn't quite bother me. There's just something very odd and eerie to the fact that it has been consistent this year. So that's that. That's all I'm going to say about it. I don't have any evidence to the contrary that it's not just people outside having fun and that they're cheap and people are accessing them. There's people reselling them, all that stuff. And that very well may be true. And I'm sure there's a good, great portion of people who are just doing it because it is fun. But it is just weird. It's weird to the fact that it has become a national phenomenon. Like, everybody across the country, like from my Facebook page and the people that I know. And again, I'm not going to say my circle is that grand or whatever, but I do have people that touch the coast. They touch different areas here and there, you know? And so everybody has had this conversation about fireworks. And again, it's a big enough conversation that New York Times. I was going to say the New York Post. The New York Times did an article on it. So, hey, people are talking about it, and it needs to be addressed. So that's something that we can talk about, too, on our viewer line. What do you think? Is it a conspiracy? Is it just people having fun? So that viewer line is 216-236-4842. 216-236-4842. You can also email us at views216fcb@gmail.com. That's views, V-I-E-W-S, 216fcb@gmail.com. Let me know what you think. And again, just to really mention at least real quickly about Juneteenth, and I wish that I can do a deeper dive on it. But we did just celebrate it. Juneteenth is an African American holiday. At this point, it's not something that is nationally designated, but in many African American circles across the country, there are moments to celebrate it in one way or form, some shape or form. Here in Cleveland, Ohio, I have been in the past associated with a dance company, a couple African dance companies throughout my life where I participated in African dance and learned some of the traditional rhythms of the motherland. And those companies would have Juneteenth celebrations every year. So I have been aware of what Juneteenth was and have participated in some shape or form, even if it's just by attending a celebration to commemorate the day. So Juneteenth is every year on June 19th, and it is the day that in 1865 in Galveston, Texas, slaves were informed that they had been emancipated by the Emancipation Proclamation. And so that was about 2.5 years later than when the Emancipation Proclamation were still in effect. And there were still areas in the country at that time that many slaves were, however, still enslaved because they had not been told there's a little debate as to whether or not they just had not been told or whether or not the information had reached them. So there's some conversation about the fact that they weren't told because the plantation owners wanted to get another harvest out of them, etc. But this is when the slaves in Galveston, Texas were made aware that they were indeed free. So it is said to be the day in which, by that time, all the slaves had the information and understood that they were now free. All the slaves in the Confederacy, to be clear. So this actually was not something that emancipated any slave holding, any slaves that were held in Union territory. So that's a little bit of another conversation that we won't get into. So pretty much the fact of the matter is that the emancipation and the end of slavery in this country was a bit complicated. It was not just, when it wasn't the Emancipation Proclamation being signed into law that automatically freed the slaves, and the Emancipation Proclamation in itself only freed slaves in Confederate territory. And so then after the Civil War, the information had to spread. There was areas that did not enact that emancipation immediately. And then after that, there still had to be slavery within the Union still had to be dealt with. But nonetheless, so the celebration at this point really kind of concludes or just commemorates the fact that there is a little bit of a difference about in history in the independence of Black American. So it is a commemoration, I think, of the long road to freedom. And partly it became such a big deal this year because we're still on that journey here in the United States. So there has been commentary that I've seen in a couple different places that I believe, so through a couple different news articles, whether it was in conversation about Juneteenth or in conversation about the uprisings that we've seen across the country in relationship to police brutality, that we have, Blacks in America had been slaves longer than we have been free. And so our battle for equality and for freedoms and for privileges that the Constitution declares for citizens of the United States, we are still carrying on. And any of the gains and anything that we have had seemed to, any milestones we have seemed to reach in the past, there has been a very long, arduous, and complicated journey to that. So that's what I'm going to go ahead and leave that there in reference to Juneteenth, wishing that we can dive a little bit into that deeper, but there again, June has been long, and I guess we can even say that it's been hot. So last month, as we got off, as I ended the recording of this podcast, it was reported, it was my first notification that George Floyd had been taken from us. What was so heavy and so devastating about that moment is that last month I had just recorded, and the bulk of our conversation last month was on Ahmaud Arbery, who was slain while jogging. There's the fireworks, y'all. So I'm gonna try to talk in between them. Okay, who was slain while jogging? For the critics out there, I will even say slain while visiting a neighborhood that was not his. He was slain while house hunting. And that just, me even saying house hunting brings to mind, there was a time where I was dating a guy who was really into infrastructure of houses. And there's one particular neighborhood in the area that he really liked a lot of the houses. So we didn't live in this area. Now, this area pretty much is somewhat diverse. It would characterize itself as a diverse. But anyway. And accepting, but we didn't live in this area, but we would go on walks often. He and I, sometimes with the dogs, would go on walks in this neighborhood and just look at the houses. And if by chance that there was a house that not necessarily under construction, but like for sale, or that was clearly empty, I do recall that we would a lot of times try to take as close a look as possible. Now, of course, because these were not necessarily under construction, they were tend to be locked by realtors and et cetera. We could not enter, but we would go on the porch, we would look through windows, we would do things that probably to an outsider could very well look suspicious. All I know is in this case of Ahmaud Arbery is that whether it looked suspicious, whether he had his behavior lend to questions from the neighbors, that he didn't tend to be in this area, and he, even if he entered into a constructed under a house under construction to look at, where he obviously did not take anything, and that was not something that people were accustomed to, he was still slain. He was still slain. His life was still taken. And then I turn around and get off after that discussion, and another man's life is taken. And let me also pause and interject that at this time, Breonna Taylor had also been murdered. And still to this day, Breonna Taylor's murderers have not been arrested. Breonna Taylor was asleep in her bed. In her bed, in her home. Where police entered mistakenly. So we will not, and I have not forgot about Breonna Taylor, even though she was not mentioned in our last show. So then we moved to George Floyd just after I get off the show. And I'm dumbfounded and I'm perplexed. And I think to a lot of Black people, a lot of these things are very hard to stomach. I can remember when Sandra Bland was arrested that it took me weeks, I believe, to look at the video. And I can remember writing a post on Facebook saying that if I see it, I know that something would be taken away from me. Now, with Sandra Bland, once I did see it, that very thing, whatever that thing is, and I still don't have a name for it, because even at that point, I can't say it was innocence, because innocence has long been gone, especially in reference to the brutality of Black people. But something left when I finally did. But I did it because for the sake of being informed. And so there's a lot of things that I kind of push myself to watch, to absorb, to think about for the sake of being informed. And, you know, that even puts in mind to a conversation I was just having at my daughter's wedding with one of my best friends from high school, who said that she was watching a lot of the African-American Black Power television that's been on. But she was watching what noted our successes. Like, she talked about specifically the PBS documentary on Toni Morrison. And I said, well, I've been watching a lot of other stuff. And it's been a lot of stuff, so much that I can't really name. And I would have to go back. And she said, well, I don't want to see how we rioted or how someone else got killed. I don't want to see all of that. I want to know how we stood strong and how we've overcome. And I understand that. But by me being in the space and place that I am, and even just a person who is trying to put out information and have some commentary, like, there's been things that I feel like I don't have a choice to watch, whether or not that's really what I want to indulge in or not. And the fact is that our history, our lives are these both and situations. So Sandra Bland definitely, I know, affected me. And I know at that time, with a series of other things that had happened before, I just knew that I just couldn't. That took forever. And that thing, whatever that thing was, it did happen after I watched. So in this moment with George Floyd, there was only but like 2 seconds. 2 seconds that I could watch. And every time I seemed to, and it seemed to be on the news that would roll the same portion of the clip where he was like visibly gagging and like head rolling, trying to get for air and say that he can't breathe. And that was so mightily atrocious. And that even took me maybe a week or two before I saw that point. But the whole entire video and all of what is out there, I still haven't seen. I can't sit and bear to watch. But they're now, with the death of George Floyd, with the death of Ahmaud Arbery, with the death of Breonna Taylor, has been a real consciousness and a real movement that is now seemingly not to be easily quelled. Hopefully, it is not easily quelled. So we have, you know, there's been, after other deaths, there's been protests, there's been things that people have happened, people have galvanized, mothers have ran for office, things have happened that has changed the course of how people begin to think about what's happening to Black people in America. But right now, it seems like we're in a place where that conversation is not letting up. It has been a sustained conversation over the last several weeks. And I hope that this is a continued and sustained conversation. So right now I am praying for the families of those that were unnecessarily lost in any way, but especially to police or any other government entity where it seems harder to get justice. And the issue, let's be clear, is the fact that justice is harder and there are people who are expected, they have expectations on them in their positions. And that expectation is to serve. That expectation is to protect. And so you do not serve and protect by taking a life. And I really don't know in what circumstance there really is that you can call yourself serving to protect, or to protect and protect the community that you're in. Not yourself, but the community that you serve. So, making that statement, I hear everybody who says, well, they have families and they want to get back home to their families. Yes, it is a natural human instinct to protect yourself. It is a human instinct to try to go back home to your family. But it is our assumption. It is our assumption. Like, there's a lot of conversation. When I know that when I was little, when Cops is now off the air, for example. But I feel like by watching Cops or something like that, like you would think that somebody would, or maybe just the TV shows. I don't know where we got it from. But there is this idea that if someone was pointing a gun at somebody else or whatever, that you would wound them, but not wound them to take their life. So there was like, you shoot them in the leg so they fall. And again, this might be all imaginary. So all these people who shoot guns and hunts and all this other stuff, don't come after me. Because to be honest, I'm going to tell you, I don't know. I don't. I've never shot a gun. I've never seen anyone or anything killed. So I don't know. But, you know, in these spaces, in this messaging that we would get from media was that police would, if they needed to fire that gun, their first instinct would be to shoot in a way that to disable and not to kill. To shoot in a way that they could then disarm you and overpower you because you were injured. Not to kill. And so there was areas to shoot that would do that, that would stop you from running, that would stop you from doing whatever you were doing. And then also they were supposed to administer some aid once you were disarmed and disabled, and you would then go and receive aid, and then after receiving that aid, you would have to face the consequence of whatever deed that you had done. So at minimum, the American mythos says that this is what police officers are supposed to do. And mind you, the American mythos is not just sold to white people. It has also been sold to black people. And so there is an expectation that in black communities, there is a thought. This is what we want. This is what we think is supposed to happen. That is in black communities, we have police officers that do that. You know, I can even remember the days of police officers coming to your aid on the side of the road when you would break down. When I was little, I traveled a lot to D.C., the D.C. area, the Baltimore, Maryland, the Maryland, Virginia area. And my granddad would have this old van that would sometimes overheat or something would happen. And we would have to pull over, maybe run a gas. I don't remember what happened, but I know that a couple times we had to pull over on the side of the highway. And I can remember the idea of people flashing their lights at us. And that was an indication that people were willing to come to help us. So at wherever, this is of course not in the days of cell phones, so people couldn't call for you or you couldn't call anybody yourself. So these flashing lights will indicate that at the next rest stop or at the next payphone place that this person got to, they would call for aid. They will call for help for us. And then the idea at the time that once the police got there, or the help that would come would actually be able to help the situation of being stuck on the road, the broken down vehicle. Not to scrutinize or not to put anybody in danger of possibly being arrested or brutalized or murdered. So now that whole characteristic is not it. Now, by the time I was a teenager, by the time I was driving, and maybe a little ways before that, it very much changed to where even something like that, the expectation that you can ask police officers for help on the side of the road, walk up to them for help, has changed for Black America for sure. The idea of really receiving that assistance and not putting yourself in a worse predicament than what you were in. Whether it's for minor crimes like traffic tickets, and I'll admit I have plenty of those experiences, especially as I was going through college with warrants for traffic tickets that I had forgot about or whatever happened with them or whatever. But there was a moment, there was a season that I went through that, and thank God, Jesus, still praying on that's not the season that I'm in right now, but there was a season. And so that also was something that probably is still ingrained in me to say, okay, well, if I do ask for help, what situation do I put myself in? If I do ask for help, what situation do I put other people in my car in? And again, let's be clear. These are not serious warrants. These are not serious situations. So let's not make this into a conversation about, well, who else will be in your car, whatever, whatever. Like, you don't know the people, you got that type of people around you. These are situations in which life happens. People happen. People get traffic tickets. People get there's minor violations all the time. People forget about stuff all the time. So that response is definitely heightened. You know, this situation with George Floyd, it was over $20, potential $20, counterfeit $20. And you know, how many of us really know whether our money is counterfeit or not? We exchange, you know, if especially if we're in the stealing the practice, a lot of us is exchanging cash and et cetera. You know, people paying for cash, you never know. You never really know. Nobody but the people at the store walk around with the pins that indicate whether or not the money is counterfeit or not. And is that a crime that is worth 8 minutes and 46 seconds? And I do want to speak to the 8 minutes and 46 seconds for a little while. You know, a lot of times, like right now, we've been on the radio for or recording for 45 minutes, just over 45 minutes. I don't feel like it's been 45 minutes. And a lot of times when I look up and look at our timing, I'm like, dang, how did I talk that long? So the point of that is to say that time does move quickly in most situations. So on most days, 8 minutes and 46 seconds is not really a lot. It's not a lot to do much. It's not a lot to do much. But have you sat still for that long? This was highlighted during a protest for me that I attended with my daughter. And this was actually a smaller protest here in a suburban area. And the speaker, after the march, asked us to kneel for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Now, if y'all know me, I'm not the fittest chick out here in the block. And, you know, I'm of that age where kneeling and even standing sometimes is not necessarily like the thing you want to do. So I went down for a moment. And was like, oh, my knees hurt. I can't do this. I ended up sitting. But as we're sat still, as we sat in the silence, as we sat in a position that was uncomfortable, not life-threatening, but uncomfortable. As we sat in a position that was uncomfortable, 8 minutes and 46 seconds became eternity. Was impossible. So, for those of us who may not understand what 8 minutes and 46 seconds does to a person, what 8 minutes and 46 seconds could do to a community, for those of us who are saying that, you know, they don't see racism. They don't see that there was anything wrong necessarily. Like, they're not going to point at this cop and say that he was racist, or point at this cop and just say that he was being outright evil. I want you to sit still for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. We're going to really wrap it up right there. But I'm going to leave this pause in this broadcast for the next 8 minutes. Okay, you guys, that was our 8-minute break. And that was in honor of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and all of the black men, women, and children that have lost their lives to police brutality, those that have lost their lives under the cover of protection when they shouldn't have. This, I do hope, if you have not done that exercise, I hope you were able to stay with us. I hope you were able to feel the discomfort, even in the sense of sitting here. I'm sitting here in my living room at this moment in the comfort of my own home. But to sit still for 8 total minutes is not something that most of us do on a regular basis. There is something to entertain us. There is something to relieve us of that comfort, that discomfort. And so unless we have some practice or discipline that we might exercise, and some of us may, but to sit still for a total 8 minutes is uncomfortable. So I want us to put ourselves in that place. Have empathy for the person of George Floyd, no matter who else or what else he may have been, may have done. He was a person. He was a person that did not deserve what happened to him. That our justice system supposedly does not call for. It does not call for police officers to be judge, jury, and executioner at the same time. We are supposed to have a balance of power. They are supposed to enforce the law by arresting or detaining. And a jury and a judge are supposed to decide and determine whether or not they accurately were accused, that they were guilty of the crime, and therefore also what punishment suits the crime. And at no point does counterfeiting, whether large amounts of money or a $20 bill, there is no point where that has ever been in a place that it is punished by execution. And then we move to the fact that in the few places where executions still happen, they are supposed to be done in a humane manner. And imagine that if you can't just sit still without anybody constraining your breath, your movements, or anything to that nature, if you could not kneel willingly for that total amount of time, imagine two things, actually. Imagine the pain and distress that George Floyd was going under, the lack of humanity that he was feeling at the time. And then even to that, Mr. Chauvin, imagine the sheer evilness, the amount of energy he had to exert to stay on that man for that length of time. Imagine, without letting up to shifts or anything that would may have given some type of break and some ability for George Floyd to catch his breath. So that is that. As always, there's a lot of stuff that we did not get into that I really wanted to. One of which, for example, so I'm just going to kind of give them that in a, give it to you in a, just a point, just point it out to you. And this is now for you all to go and continue the conversation. Again, you can always call us and have more conversations and give your opinions. So that's one. Bubba Wallace and NASCAR and the news. So we have on that pretty much a full story at this point. What are your feelings? What are your thoughts? I'll say just quickly that something, the energy around NASCAR, the energy right now reflecting the changes, especially to the use of the Confederate flag and Confederate symbolism, which is pervasive in NASCAR, really causes a very difficult environment for Bubba Wallace. And so leading on to, you know, now finding this noose and things like that, and what vividly looks like a noose, I would say is definitely at minimum causing a very different, difficult environment for Bubba Wallace. And then lastly, this was like a real conversation I really wanted to get into. The Black Lives Matter mission statement and its attack on the nuclear family. At this point, since we don't have too much time to really have a conversation about it, I would ask that you all will go to their website and read it. Read the About Us tab. Read what they say about the nuclear family. And for all the good that they have done, I'll say this quickly, that for all the good they have done in bringing our attention and being on the forefront of the resistance against police brutality, do they speak for the Black community in reference to what they are charging in their mission statement? I don't think that they have had a platform or I haven't heard any real discussion or work around the entirety of their mission statement. But what does that mean? What does that mean, one, for anyone in their support of Black Lives Matter? If they have direct support, like by financing, if they have joined a local chapter in their area. And what does that mean for even the greater community that has taken on the hashtag Black Lives Matter? Are they the same? Are they two different things? Can we still have the hashtag and not support necessarily or directly the organization? Should we also, in our collective voices as people who are concerned for Black lives, put some pressure on the organizers of Black Lives Matter to reconsider what they're about and what and who they support? So those are my questions I'm going to leave you all with. And again, I'd like to hear from you. And you can always hit me up at 216-236-4842. You can leave a message or text that number. If you leave a message, we will air it online here. We send the text, I will read it. And also, you can email if you like at views216fcb@gmail.com. views216fcb. frankcharliebravo@gmail.com. All right, you guys, you enjoy this coming July. For those of you who still celebrating Independence Day, be safe. Please wear a mask as much as possible. You may see me out sometimes forgetting it. So I don't want anybody to think that I don't care about you. I do. So be safe as possible. Wash your hands. Stay within small groups and within your nuclear family. We'll all get through this with God. And in Jesus' name, I'm going to leave you there. Hope to see, hear from you and talk to you again soon. I'm out.
The FCB Radio Network. First-class broadcasting worldwide.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.